5 consisting of townhouses and single-family detached condominiums. B, the development shall be served as part of a Sussex County Sanitary Sewer District. C, the developer shall comply with all requirements and specifications of the County Engineering Department. D, the RPC shall be served by Central Water. E, stormwater management and erosion and sedimentation control facilities shall be constructed in accordance with all applicable state and county requirements. These facilities shall be operated in a manner consistent with best management practices. F, the final site plan for each phase of the development shall contain the approval of the Sussex Conservation District upon it. G, the project will be incorporated as part of the existing Americana Bayside MRRPC, also referred to as Change Zone 1393, and so shall be subject to and benefited by the conditions imposed upon that development, except as modified herein. H, all entrance, roadway, intersection, and multimodal improvements required by DLDOT shall be completed in accordance with DLDOT standard determinations. I, the interior street design and parking areas shall meet or exceed Sussex County street design specifications and requirements. J, the applicant shall form a condominium association to be responsible for the maintenance of streets, roadways, buffers, stormwater management areas, and community areas. K, all road naming and addressing shall be subject to review and approval of Sussex County Mapping and Addressing Department. L, the final site plan shall include a landscape plan for all buffer areas showing all the landscaping and vegetation to be included in those areas. M, the final site plan shall be subject to review and approval of the Planning and Zoning Commission. There was a motion and a second and carried with 4 votes to forward this application to council with a recommendation that the application be approved for the reasons and with the conditions stated. That motion carried 4-0 with Mr. Burke not voting since he did not participate in this public hearing. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Question, Mr. Lang.
Is the applicant present, Mr. Fuquay?
Yes, Mrs. Deaver, gentlemen, good afternoon. For the record, I'm Jim Fuquay. I'm attorney representing the applicant. With me is Doug Brown. On behalf of the applicant, Jim Willey and Steve Marsh from GMB Engineering, and Ed Lene from Environmental Resources. I'll just be making the presentation. They are available if there's any questions about anything. As Mr. Lang stated, there was an exhibit book that was submitted for the record. This is an application for an MRRPC containing 55 residential units. That's comprised of 17 townhouses and 38 single-family homes that would be in a condominium form of ownership. The site contains 20.94 acres. We're proposing the 55 units. It would be a density of approximately 3 units per acre. The site is located on the northeast side of East Sand Cove Road. It's just south of Route 54 and basically in the middle of the Americana Bayside or PC development, which you can see on the plot right here. Route 54 being up here, this is Americana Bayside. This is the site. The applicant, CMF Bayside LLC, is the developer of the Americana Bayside RPC. That was approved in 2001. The Americana Bayside development is composed of 887 acres. It was approved for 1,700 residential units, extensive recreational facilities, a Jack Nicklaus designed golf course, and a retail office section. Originally, when the original development was being planned, CMF Bayside tried to purchase this property, but that at that time it was not able to do so. It accumulated the other properties that became the development, and then subsequently they were able to acquire this property, and that basically is the application before you today to add this parcel to the RPC. As with the existing Americana Bayside development, this site will be served by Central Water for domestic use and fire protection, and that would be provided by Tidewater Utilities. The parcel is located in the Fenwick Island Sanitary Sewer District, so it will be served by county sewer. The county sewer concept plan allocated 56 EDUs for this parcel. And we are proposing 55 units. That is within the planned study numbers. I might mention the original application as filed was for 59 units, but that was reduced to 55 units. As far as other utilities, electric, cable, TV, telephone, they'll all be provided by the existing utilities that are providing services in the area. The site is also in the Indian River School District, and fire protection is provided by the Roxana Volunteer Fire Company. There's extensive retail shopping located for residents of the area along 54, and that includes a Harris Teeter grocery store, which is actually part of the Americana Bayside retail area, and that actually can be accessed from this site by the internal roads of Americana Bayside without going onto Route 54. The residents of this development will be part of the Americana Bayside development. They will be able to utilize the extensive existing recreational amenities that exist at Bayside. There'll be interior sidewalks connecting this section of the development to the multimodal walking and biking path, which is located along East Sand Cove Road. And that multimodal path connects to about 5.5 miles of paths that are already constructed throughout the development. There'll also be an on-site park area on this particular area, which is this area located back here. You can see from the site plan, there's an entrance into here with this interior circular road that comes around. These are the single-family condominiums. The townhouses are here. And then there's a second entrance here to serve this site right here. Seven single-family condos located here. The site does contain areas of tidal and non-tidal wetlands. A formal wetland delineation was performed by Environmental Services, Inc., Ed Linnae. The wetland delineation plan and report were submitted to the Army Corps of Engineers, who did inspect the site and did issue an approved wetland jurisdictional determination verifying the wetland boundaries. There's no regulated impacts on any of the wetland areas proposed by this development. There is a 50-foot buffer from the tidal or state wetlands provided, which of course is required by the code. And there's also a 25-foot buffer provided from the non-tidal or federal wetlands, which is not required but is being provided. Extensive roadway improvements have already been completed as part of the Americana Bayside development, and DelDOT has issued a letter of no objection as to the entrances for the this site. The new development, as I stated, will be managed by a condominium association, and the owners, in addition, will be members of the overall Americana Bayside HOA. As to the applicable land use regulations, the site is in the environmentally sensitive development area. As you know, that is a growth area under the comprehensive plan, and that is reinforced by the fact that central water and county sewer already serve this area. There was an environmental assessment report submitted, which is part of the exhibit book, which is required for developments in the environmentally sensitive area. The existing Americana Bayside development is zoned MRRPC, so the requested rezoning for this site is consistent with the existing zoning in the area. And basically, I think this is an example of infill zoning where the area basically is existing, and this is asking for zoning that's consistent with the neighboring properties. Under the state strategies plan, the site is in a level 3 area, and the state plus comments recognize that the proposed rezoning is in compliance with the goals and objectives recognized in both the state strategies plan as well as the county comprehensive plan. As I mentioned, the site plan is pretty straightforward. There's two entrances serving the two areas. The park area, which I pointed out, and the wetland setbacks and boundaries and buffers. The internal street system is as shown, and there'll be landscaping throughout the development. As Mr. Lang stated, on March 10th, the Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval of the application subject to 13 conditions. We believe that proposed development conforms to the state strategies plan as well as the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan. It's a logical land use addition, an extension of the Americana Bayside RPC development, and we do request your approval for the reasons stated and the conditions recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission. And that would complete my presentation, subject to any conditions you might, or any questions you might have for any of our consultants.
Any questions? Okay, is there anyone here to speak in favor of this application? Seeing none, is there anyone here in opposition to the application? Again, not seeing any opposition, the public record will be closed.
Okay, I would ask you to read the title.
Excuse me. This is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to an MRRPC medium density residential district, a residential planned community for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 20.94 acres more or less, filed on behalf of CMF Bayside LLC. And you all heard to Mr. Lank's comments from Planning and Zoning and the conditions that they asked to be imposed on this ordinance.
Title being read, what's the pleasure of council?
Yeah, make a motion we approve
CZ 1701
with the recommended conditions as expressed by P&Z.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any questions on the motion? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes, I vote yes for the very reasons that the Planning and Zoning has given and with the conditions.
Mr. Cole?
Yeah, I believe it's this is also an appropriate infill parcel. Americana Bayside has already started the development in the area it's compatible with the existing development. Yes.
Phillips?
I agree. It's infill. It's good for the economy. It's compatible based on recommendation Planning and Zoning. I vote yes.
Wilson?
I vote yes on recommendation of P&Z.
And I also think it does appropriate. It's an infill for the area. It's already in existence down there with Bayside. And based on a recommendation of Planning and Zoning, I vote yes. Motion carried.
Thank you. Our next public hearing is on conditional use 1881, filed on behalf of Harold R. Ennis Jr. and Dick Ennis Incorporated. It's an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district to operate businesses related to grass cutting, power washing, marine services and sales, and construction services to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, containing 1.5188 acres, more or less. Mr. Lank?
Yes, thank you. Well, this application is considered conditional use number 1881. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on February 24th of 2011. During that public hearing, the applicants on December 30th, 2011, had provided an exhibit booklet, which is a part of the record for the public hearing. And I will advise that before the council, there is a black three-ring binder in front of each of you, and that is the revised exhibit booklet submitted by the applicants for the benefit of council.
This is different than what Planning and Zoning got?
There's been some additions to it.
Okay.
Right. On January 10th of 2011, the County Engineering Department provided comments. On February 16th of 2011, the Conservation District provided comments. Both those agency comments are part of the report, and they're summarized. We did receive 6 letters and or emails in support of the application. Other than the name of those writers are listed in the report. Dick Ennis was present with Shannon Carmine, attorney from Sergovic and Carmine Professional Association, and gave testimony. Charles Gross was present, spoke in support of the application's business, hard work, honesty, and assistance. Mr. Gross also submitted a letter in support prior to the meeting. There were no parties present in opposition to the application. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed this application, and the commission did defer action for further consideration, again to allow Mr. Burton the opportunity to vote on the application. That motion carried 4-0. Mr. Burton was not present during the discussion. On March 10 of 2011, the commission again discussed this application under old business, but again did defer action for further consideration, and that motion carried 5-0. I received no additional comments other than the additions made to your exhibit booklets. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Did the second deferral have to do with Mr. Burton not being there?
No, they just, it was a motion to defer for further consideration.
Further consideration, okay.
Any other questions of Mr. Lang? Is the applicant present and prepared to go forward? Ms. Carmen?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Shannon Carmine. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Sergovic and Carmine. I represent the applicant, Mr. Harold R. Ennis Jr. and Dick Ennis Inc. Mr. Ennis is in attendance this afternoon. He's seated to my left. As Mr. Lang stated, we did submit booklets for your consideration. I would like to note that the booklet contains a revised site plan. The site plan was revised following the planning and zoning hearing. Unfortunately, since we just received it, I do not have a large version of the site plan other than what's in the booklets, but I do have an additional booklet in the event that anyone from the public wants to view the site plan. I'm going to leave it on the bench there. I also received just now 10 emails and or letters in support of the application, which I request to submit them into the record at this point in time. As stated, the applicant is seeking a conditional use of land in an AR1 district to operate existing businesses related to grass cutting, power washing, marine services and sales, and construction services on the property. The conditional use of land consists of approximately 1.5188 acres. The property is currently improved by a residential structure, which is currently used and occupied by the applicant as a residence and as a model home and office for his existing businesses, which again are related to grass cutting, power washing, marine services and sales, and construction services. The applicant seeks a conditional use to continue to operate these businesses on the property and to also construct a separate one-story structure that's 50 by 90 for his business operations and to store parts related to the businesses. And it's our opinion that this project does meet the purpose of the zoning code. Again, the property is located in the AR1 district. The purpose of the AR1 district is to provide for a low-density, single-family residential development, together with such churches, recreational facilities, and accessory uses as may be necessary or are normally compatible with residential surroundings. In addition, conditional uses allowed within the AR1 district include residential, business, commercial, or industrial uses when the purposes of the chapter are more fully met by the issuance of the conditional use permit. This project also complies with the Sussex County Comprehensive Plan update, June 2008. The plan identifies this property as being located in the environmentally sensitive developing area. The permitted uses in the environmentally sensitive developing area include retail and office uses. In addition, careful mixtures of home with light commercial and institutional uses can be appropriate to provide for convenient services and to allow people to work close to home. The proposed use is to operate the businesses of the applicant on the property, and thus falls within the permitted uses as identified by the plan. Also, the conditional use, if granted, will not adversely affect the neighboring uses or the neighboring area. The property is located on the corner of Route 24 and Angola Road. There are a variety of uses in this area. The adjoining property is residential. However, we have received a letter in support of this application from the property owner, Barbara Dorman, and that was included in our exhibit booklet for your consideration. The property directly across the street from the subject property has a conditional use for a wastewater treatment facility. The property adjoining that property, so diagonally across the street from this subject property, is zoned residential but is currently operating a landscaping business on the property. Further west on Route 24, we have approved professional offices. We head in the other direction, east on 24. We have a fire station, and then there's Peddler's Village and gas stations, all within close proximity to this property. On Angola Road, the adjacent property is currently operating a produce stand, as well as a landscaping business on the premises. And then next to that property, we have a conditional use for the meeting place known as the dry dock. Thus, it's our opinion that the proposed use is in character with the existing uses in close proximity to the property. Mr. Ennis has been operating his business on the property for the past 10 years. He's received no complaints from neighboring property owners with regard to the proposed use. In fact, again, he has received the support of the adjoining residential property owner and has received the support of many local citizens in the area. The grass cutting, power washing, and marine services and sales businesses are, for the most part, seasonal businesses, as they're operating approximately 6 to 2 months out of the year. There is an existing tree line around the perimeter of the property, which will serve as a buffer. In addition, there will be no adverse impact on traffic in the area. A service level evaluation was requested by the applicant, and DelDOT has advised that a traffic impact study was not recommended. In addition, the applicant has recently received a letter of no objection from DelDOT with regard to the proposed entrance. Also in the booklet, the applicant has included some self-imposed restrictions or conditions. Although the applicant does repair boats, there will be no storage of boats on the property. The applicant intends to have no more than 5 employees at the property during any period of time. The proposed hours of operations are 7 days a week, with hours on Monday through Saturday from 8 to 5 and on Sunday from 9 to 2. The applicant does not seek any expansion of the current uses. Although there was a sign located on the property for Mr. Ennis's modular home business, he did remove that at the request of the county. At this point in time, if the conditional use is approved, he would request permission to replace the sign, which would comply with the code, which would advertise the 4 businesses. The property is served by an individual on-site well and septic system. It's our opinion that this project does meet the purpose of the zoning code and is consistent with the comprehensive plan. It'll also facilitate the ability of Mr. Ennis, a longtime Sussex County businessman, to continue to operate his businesses on the property. And for these reasons, on behalf of the applicant, I respectfully request that the council approve this application. That does conclude our presentation, and of course, we are available for any and all questions that you may have.
What is it that's bringing this to our attention?
There were some notices of violation.
Okay. Explain maybe, Shannon, I understand grass cutting, power washing, and custom construction services are all going to be off-site, so it shouldn't be much of an issue. But what does the applicant mean by the marine services and sales?
If I may introduce Mr. Ennis.
Yeah, how you doing?
Good afternoon. Identify yourself for the
record. Hi, I'm Harold Ennis. I go by Dick Ennis. Mm-hmm. Your question to the marine business, if somebody should have a power head that needs to be done, in other words, another engine had blown up on their boat, I would bring that back and repair it instead of being on their property. The sales part of it, I do take boats. I buy them, refurbish them, and resell them.
Okay, so you have some boats sitting up there.
Correct.
Okay.
I do a few.
If it gets approved, I guess the, like with used car sales, we always want to know where they're going to be placed, but I don't know if planning and zoning, I don't know if you told them you're going to be selling
these
boats. Okay. All right.
And we did discuss at the planning and zoning hearing the placement of those boats that would be for sale. And they would be right on the corner there at Route 24 and Angola Road.
All right,
so that they would be visible.
Well, as long as it's within setbacks and all that other stuff.
Of course.
Refresh my memory. Were one of the conditions, did one of the conditions have to do, that you were suggesting, had to do with landscaping? I didn't hear it.
There is a, currently on the property, there's a tree line around the perimeter of the property that would serve as a buffer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that Mr. Ennis, if that was one of the conditions imposed by the council, that I assume that you would have no problem with
Correct.
Any additional
okay.
landscaping that would be required.
But it's not a condition, it's not a suggested condition in this list.
It is right. not.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Hearing none, is there anyone here in favor of this application? Yes, sir.
Good afternoon. My name is Jim Gallagher. I live at 26622 River Breeze Drive in Millsboro. Pardon the throat. I've known Dick for about 10 years. He's been a customer of mine. I've been a customer of his. I've always known him to be an honest, hardworking man. My son, who just finished college, worked for Dick for 2 years, and I can tell you that he was also a good employer. Bringing his business down to that area is, I feel, is also going to be a benefit to the area, because right now, and I know I speak as a boat owner, you're pretty much relegated to one person down there as far as marine services, and I don't think that that's a good thing for the people in the area. There's no competition. There's no choice. So, you know, besides bringing a good employer that I know takes care of his people, you're also bringing a service to the community that I think is well needed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Sir?
You have to bear with me. I'm not used to speaking in public.
That's fine. Just state your name, please, and your address.
My name is Charles Gross. I live at Potnets Bayside, Tunnel Community. I've been in my home for the last 17 years. I spoke last month in support of Dick Ennis. The reason that I support Dick is that there is a need for him and people like him. The last time I spoke here was about when Dottie and I wanted to go crabbing. My motor wouldn't start. I called two or three or four different people. The numerous calls at the marine facilities was between 17 and 24 days. I wanted to go crabbing now. I called Dick Ennis and he arrived within 4 hours. Right away, he seemed to know what was wrong with my engine. He said it was probably a clogged filter by ethanol. He was right. It was clogged. He said what I had to do, and I did it. He said I had to buy a piece of a filter, and it was cost $75. And he said every 2 months I had to change another filter, and the filters were $25 a piece. Total price is $25. Ethanol has caused havoc in our marina. Now they're talking about increasing it to 15%. Bureaucrats.
Wait, more bureaucrats.
Oh, excuse me, but you guys always seem to cost us money.
You're legislators.
I'm sorry,
that's right.
She corrected
me. We hire bureaucrats.
We hire bureaucrats.
Okay. Since that time, our marina on Long Neck has been cut in half. Gone is Duke's. Gone is Phil Tilt. Less competition means more price, higher prices. It's hard working. Dick is a hard working, does a good job, and he's always there when he says he's going to be there. We should be encouraging people like him and not to throw obstacles in his way. Thank you. By the way, Dottie and I did go crabbing. That's Dottie back there. Tomorrow's our 53rd wedding anniversary.
Congratulations. Mm.
We caught 3/4 of a bushel of crabs, and they were delicious.
When did you catch them?
Crab. We went crabbing. We caught.
When's the other day? I mean, just.
Tomorrow. No, we went crabbing that day. Oh. Dick let us go crabbing. I had to wait 17 days or 24 days. Those crabs would have been gone.
And did you bring some crabs back to Dick?
That's Dick. He was there.
Okay.
Thank him. We got 3/4 of a bushel of crabs.
Hey,
thank you. Thank you, guys.
Anyone else in favor? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application?
Yes.
Yeah. Seeing none, the public record will be closed.
Public record is closed. Obviously, P&Z deferred, so we can't act until they have taken action, so we need a motion to defer.
I move we defer.
Have a motion.
Second.
And a second to defer. Any questions on the motion? If not, we'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Thank you.
I want to know where his cramming spot is.
The next is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district to replace 260 mobile home lots with 367 seasonal RV camper sites to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County, containing 50.81 acres of a 138-acre tract. Mr. Lang.
Thank you. Again, for the record, the Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this application on February 24th of 2011, and this application is referenced as conditional use number 1862. On January 3rd of 2011, the applicant provided exhibit booklets for the record, and they were available since January 3rd. Some of the council members do have copies, not all of them. Commissioners still maintain some of the copies of the exhibit booklets. Mrs. Deaver has one, I believe. Mr. Vincent has one. Mr. Cole has one, and Mr.
Phillips has one.
Phillips.
Phillips has one. We also had received comments from DelDOT on February 5th of 2010. The County Engineering Department Utility Planning Division on January 6th of 2011. Sussex Conservation District on February 16th of 2011. All those agency comments are part of the report before the council. There were a letter received, in addition to letters received in support that are documented in the exhibit booklet, we also received a letter from William Jack Riddle in support of the application, which was summarized in the record. There were letters and emails received in opposition from Dorothy Boucher, Gregory Wagman, Calvin Campbell, Elaine Campbell, Susan Biro, Dennis Rabber, and Lou Elizio, all voicing opposition. They're also part of the record of the commission minutes in the form of a report. Richard Berman and David Podlasek were present on behalf of Nanticoke Shores Associates LLC with Gene Byard, attorney with Wilson Hubbard and Byard, and Brian Jefferson, professional engineer, all giving testimony. John Walsh, vice president of the Delaware Manufactured Home Owners Association, Patricia Wild, vice president of Bay City Manufactured Home Association, Ed Sproul, president of the Delaware Manufactured Homeowners Association and also homeowner in Rehoboth Shores. Vicki Rollison, representative of the Rehoboth Shores Tennis Association. Nell Dickerson of Delaware Manufactured Homeowners Association. Gina Miserandino, I'm sure I said that wrong, facilitator of the Sussex Housing Group. Barbara Duff, treasurer of the Rehoboth Shores Homeowners Association. Susan Lauchy, a homeowner in Silverview Farms. Debbie Irwin, a homeowner in Rehoboth Shores. Sandra Spence, a board of directors member of the Sussex Housing Group. Bruce Furry, a homeowner in Rehoboth Shores. John Morris, a homeowner in Camelot. Betty Greenwald, a homeowner in Potnets Lakeside. Tom Hinderleighton, a homeowner in Potnets Bayside. George Lubenhofer, a homeowner in White House Beach. And Charles Koleski, a Kent County resident. Roberta Hemrick, a homeowner in McNichols Place, and Al Burns, a homeowner in Mariner's Cove, were all present and spoke in opposition to this application and show equal amount of summary in the report of the commission. We also found that Patty Wall submitted photographs, Mrs. Rollison submitted photographs, and Ms. Rendino submitted a letter, and Ms. Duff submitted a petition containing 395 signatures in opposition. In reference to that, since there's only one copy, I passed down that as clipped together for the purpose of individual council review. The commission For the purpose of a count, I ask for those in support to raise hands and also those in opposition to raise hands. And we found that there were no parties present in support of the application other than the applicant and his representatives, and that 50 parties were present in opposition. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed this application and it did defer action for further consideration and to allow Mr. Burton the opportunity to vote. On March 10th, the commission again discussed this application. In their discussion, and discussion only since they did defer, Mr. Ross stated the application should be denied. Mr. Smith suggested deferral for further consideration. Mr. Johnson stated he was not prepared to make a motion and has concerns about the transition from a manufactured home park to a manufactured home park RV combination, that people lease lots in a park, not a combination of uses, that RV parks can be a benefit to the county, and that Long Neck has transitioned from a fishing camp seasonal manufactured home park area to a full-time year-round park setting. Mr. Burton stated that more time is needed to make a decision. Mr. Smith stated that a lot of comments presented during the public hearing were not relevant to land use and that more time is needed to consider land use and the conditional use. Therefore, there was a motion and a second, and it was carried unanimously to defer action for further consideration, and that motion carried 5-0. I believe before council, you all have a copy of a letter from Patty Wall in opposition to the application, and that was dated March 18th of 2011. For the benefit of today's public hearing, and it was received by fax yesterday. Do you all have a copy of that?
Yes.
And I believe that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Any questions of Mr. Lang?
These pictures I'm looking at, Lawrence, were the...
Where are they supposed to be?
Who are they from?
The pictures were provided by Mrs. Weil.
Oh.
Not the applicant.
Not the applicant.
Okay.
Mrs. Weil, Ms. Rollison provided those pictures.
Okay. And there are pictures of the existing?
There are pictures of the existing conditions in within the park.
Okay.
Any further questions of Mr. Lang? Is the applicant present and prepared to present?
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Gene Byard on behalf of the applicant. With me this afternoon are one of the owners, Richard Berman, David Palasik, the regional manager of the owner, and Byron Jefferson, the project engineer. This application is unusual because what it proposes is a new development of an approved but an undeveloped 260-lot section of an existing park on approximately 51 acres of vacant undeveloped land. All public infrastructure is either available or in place. As you will hear, DelDOT has determined that there is less traffic impact created by the development of a seasonal RV park campground than there would be created by the development of a 260-lot addition to the Rehoboth Shores mobile home community. The Long Neck Sanitary Sewer District is allocated more than sufficient sewer capacity for this project, and in fact, more than 160 EDUs will be returned to the district if this project is developed. The property is already served by the Long Neck Water Company, and again, this project, according to the county engineer and DelDOT, will have less impact than the development of the presently undeveloped 260 lot section of Rehoboth Shores. With that, I'd ask Byron Jefferson to come forward and introduce himself.
The county engineer says this development will cause, what did you say, Matt? Say that again.
What's allocated, Ms. Deaver, is 260 EDUs for 260 mobile home lots.
Mm-hmm.
For an RV or a camper, the county allocates one quarter of an EDU.
Mm.
So the reduction in volume is for two reasons. One, because less water is consumed, and two, because the RV or camper is only there seasonally. The idea here is that this park would be in operation for 7 months of the year, flooded with water cut off, and whatever other utilities would be cut off as well, so no one could live there in the off-season. That's the definition of a seasonal parcel.
Byron, if you could identify yourself, please.
My name's Byron Jefferson. I'm an engineer from Lincoln, Delaware.
And you are a licensed Delaware engineer?
Yes, I am.
Can you talk briefly about your experience in design of campgrounds and mobile home communities?
Yes, I was. I was rooting through here trying to find my refresher of who I was.
Got that right?
But I'll wing it. Wait, just
make it up as you go.
I got a degree back in 73, worked for about 9 years for construction companies, and I've been a consulting engineer in Delaware since 1983, also registered in a few of the adjacent states. I've done sewer and water development in quite a few different campgrounds, about 9 or 10 different campgrounds, Gulls Way, Cedar Village, Cedar Creek Mobile Home Park, et cetera. I've done subdivision roads and stormwater for numerous subdivisions. The Hollies at Cubbage Pond, and probably about 10 others. I've also worked on stormwater and site layouts for several commercial properties.
Byron, if you could take council on a quick tour of the area off that map on the board. And for the record, I'll hand the council a copy of the reduced version of that map.
The Rehoboth Shores total community is outlined in red here. The area, the portion of the community we want to develop as campsite is outlined in yellow on here. The adjacent properties are all AR1, some with conditional use approvals for multifamily, et cetera. Across the road, we have the tunnel company's maintenance compound. We have some other tunnel company lands as AR1. We have Herring Landing, AR1, Bay City, AR1, with conditional uses, and one residential property here that we're maintaining a 400-foot from.
What infrastructure presently exists to serve the project?
The mobile home community is served by Long Neck Sewer District, is served by the Long Neck Water Company, is served by electric and, telephone, et cetera. These services need to be expanded into this undeveloped portion where the campground's going.
But capacity exists?
The capacity was there for the total development of the 260, including the 260 mobile home lots that are not that are to be replaced by the campsites. The capacity exists in all regards, including the Deldon entrance.
Did you file an application with the Preliminary Land Use Advisory Service?
Yes, we did.
And can you tell us about your trip to PLUS and the applicant's response?
Yes. In Section E of the project booklet, we give the various comments from PLUS along with our responses to each of those comments. We believe we've responded to all their concerns.
Is it fair to say that PLUS had no objection to the project?
That's correct.
What did DelDOT say in its PLUS comments about this project?
Well, DelDOT, in their PLUS comments and our subsequent meeting with them, they told us that their final determination was that the entrance that we now had was adequate to handle the campsites without any changes. We would
still come in off of the same entrance that handles the major part of the mobile home community. And then that entrance was updated in 93, and it is
it is adequate for what we are proposing now with no changes. I know sometimes some people have questioned DLDOT's judgment on things. I agree with them on that this mobile home, that this campsite use produces less traffic than the mobile homes that it's replacing. Of course, the seasonal use is obvious. The fact that, I mean, that it's only occupied during the April through October. But even during that period, the use was expected to be less. It was, the campsites are not heavily occupied except on the weekend. I mean, they're not anywhere near 100% occupied during the regular week, except on the weekends. And then even on the weekends, a home would typically have more than one resident, and each resident would typically have a car. Campsite typically only has one car. People normally come in one car. I mean, this isn't absolute for every campsite or every mobile home, but it's typical. So even on the weekends, we expect less traffic from these 260, less traffic from the 367 campsites than we would get from the 260 mobile home sites. We also are missing incidental traffic, like from UPS, FedEx, Johnny Genosic delivers, various things that a home community gets the campsite wouldn't.
Are there any campers there now?
No.
Okay.
Nothing whatsoever. Was the wetlands evaluation performed on the site?
Yes, it was. Wetlands in section F of the booklet is a wetland delineation report by McCarthy and Associates. And
there are non-tidal wetlands around this dug pond that serves some stormwater purposes, non-tidal that we're not affecting. Other than that, there are no other wetlands in the site.
Is it correct to say that no wetlands will be disturbed if the project is developed?
That's correct.
What about a forest evaluation or a timber assessment? Was one done?
Yes, it was, and it detailed in section J of the project manual, and I'll just summarize a few statements from their from that report. They state that there's a stand of 9 acres in a mixed hardwood pine stand,
and that's in this general area.
And they say most of the stand was harvested approximately 30 years ago and regenerated naturally. Their typical upland pine hardwood forest that can be found throughout Sussex County, no rare or extraordinary trees were found or identified.
Was a rare, threatened, or endangered species report prepared?
Yes, it was. Again, it's in the project manual in section I. And again, I'll read one statement in the conclusions that pretty much summarize it. The study was done by JCM Environmental Division of Landmark Engineering. And a statement from their conclusions, the results of the habitat assessment study indicate that no federally rare, threatened, or endangered species or their habitats are present within the Rehoboth Shores property.
If you could go to the site plan, Byron, explain how this project will be buffered from the existing developed portion of Rehoboth Shores.
This will all be forested. We're exceeding 50 foot in this area from at northeast portion of the mobile home community. Now, there is some, we heard some concerns from the members of the Oakley Shores mobile home community about proximity of this to their community. So we're proposing what we just handed out, putting an additional berm in there, raising a sort of a 6 foot high berm in the wooded buffer to add more buffer in these areas where we only had, where we're at the minimum 50 foot between the mobile home community, and also in this area we have 50 foot from Lands of Bay City. So we would also be in this area through here and through here where we had the 50 foot.
The same property owner owns Rova Shores,
and what we're doing here, right?
Okay.
We show a fence, a split rail fence in that detail just handed out. We also had a split rail fence in the previous detail where we didn't have the berm. That fence is not intended as security. I mean, we're not trying to make the people of either community feel like they're inmates, you know, with a high chain link fence, whatever. It is kind of just to help show people where one community begins and the other ends, also to help discourage some golf cart traffic across there, et cetera.
Can you talk briefly about what's in the site plan, specifically referencing bathhouses, trash disposal, and so forth?
We have the existing amenities of the pool, clubhouse, some playground equipment in this area. We have a new office for the campsite that we had planned in this area, bathhouse in two locations, also trash dumpsters in those locations near the bathhouses. We provide gate to close this area off from through traffic from the mobile home community. They could still get where they're going.
And will sewer connections go to each campsite?
There will be.
So in other words, if somebody has to go to the bathroom and they're in the back of this thing, they don't have to go to that one bathhouse to use a restroom.
These are to be seasonal campsites. I mean, the people will be hooked up to sewer at each site. There will be no tent sites.
Okay. Will there be the pooled RV that the small camper or what are these park models or something? What are we?
We'll get to that, Mr. Cole. I know how you like park models.
I love park models. I don't know if that's really camping, but I'm just wondering what's hooked up to sewer.
Every site will be hooked up to sewer.
Okay, but if you have a camper, like one of these small campers that are pulled behind a car, vehicle, mm-hmm. you don't need any special permits for it. They come in there and they're there for the weekend. They have the ability to hook those up to the?
Yes.
Or do they have, like, I thought they had, like, dump places where they would take them over and dump.
We're not, we're proposing to sewer every site to the Long Neck Sewer District. We're not proposing a dump station.
Every time somebody comes in, if it's short-term, transient type of a camper,
I believe
you'll hook up to the sewer, hook up to the water each time they come in and go.
Well, it's not expecting to have the transient campers. Expecting
transient campers.
The plan is for seasonal campers.
Okay.
But you'll hear that from Mr. Palazzo.
Okay.
What about security? Can you speak briefly to that?
I believe there's plans for roving security. We would gate off the campsite area.
And there is existing security in the park.
There is existing security.
All right. How are you going to address stormwater management issues?
We can provide direct outfall to the tidal waters, and we would use green practices, which would be green buffers or the bioswales to clean the stormwater before discharge to the tidal water.
How much impervious space will be developed on site?
We have about 39% open area mm-hmm. we're proposing on the site.
Let's talk about the environmentally sensitive developing district overlay zone. This property is certainly within it. How does this project comply with that ordinance?
Mm-hmm.
We believe, okay, the summary, we believe we comply in all regards with the ordinance. I find it to. There was, in the booklet under section K, we're to provide with natural historic features. There are none. Minimal use of wetlands and floodplains. We already discussed that. We are not affecting any open space, scenic views. We're providing 39% open space, and the scenic views are what they are. I mean, there are views of the wetlands, of the Rehoboth Shores marsh area. Minimization of tree, vegetation, soil removal, and grade change. Of course, we plan to change the grade just as little as possible. It only makes sense to do that. We plan to not take in any more trees than we have to. Screening, we've already discussed the provisions for screening. Provisions for water supply, we'll have central water from Long Neck Sewer District, sewage disposal, the county's Long Neck Sewer District. Surface and groundwater prevention. Nothing is proposed for the site, which creates a concern for groundwater pollution. Erosion and sediment control, we will follow and go through the necessary procedures with Sussex Conservation District. Safe vehicular and pedestrian mobility. We'll be using the existing entrance, no new entrance on the Level Neck Road. We'll be providing nature walk areas through the
buffer zones and also through the other wooded areas.
If preservation and conservation of farmland, that is, I mean, this does not affect farmland. Effect on property values, replacing these undeveloped mobile home sites with campsites in the future should have no detrimental effect on property values.
Is that right?
Yeah,
is that right?
I mean, that's my belief. I mean,
that's his opinion.
Don't
get carried away.
No, I'm not carried away.
Disagree. Effect on area roadways and public transportation have no effect on public transportation, and Delta says a less effect on area roadways that would be generated by the 260 mobile home sites that they replace. It's compatibility with other land use areas. The Long Neck area has a mixture of commercial, residential, recreational uses. The campground facility should blend well with the other uses in the area. Effect on the area waterways, no adverse effects. There is a bit mentioned, one amenity, there is a marina, an underutilized
marina available to the residents of Rehoboth Shores out in this area.
Why is it underutilized?
Because people don't want to use it again. I can't tell you. I mean, I'm saying there's open slips. There are open slips there. So I'm not.
There's room for you, Mr. Cole.
That's okay. No, okay. No, no, I just.
Well, they don't want to go crabbing, I guess.
Charging too much for a slip.
Mm-hmm.
On economic and recreational benefits, we believe these campsites, the 367 campsites, proposed in an area where there's no available camping ground spaces currently, would in itself provide a recreational option that does not exist.
And one last set of questions, Byron. To your knowledge, is placement of a camper or an RV in a mobile home park next to a mobile home prohibited by county ordinance?
Yes, it is prohibited.
What we're talking about here is an undeveloped piece of land.
That's correct.
And how close would a camper in this area be from any existing mobile home or any developed mobile home lot? The closest would be 50 feet from a campsite to an adjacent mobile home site through the buffer with the burn, wooden buffer with the burn. Yeah. Other places there's more, other places which would certainly more than that.
Thanks. If I can, I'd like David Pelosic to come forward.
David, if you could identify yourself and what you do.
My name is David Palasek. I am the regional manager for Mid-Atlantic Shore Properties, which owns Rehoboth Shores and also Tall Pines Campground in Lewis.
What is Tall Pines for council's benefit?
Tall Pines is a campground located just off of Route 9 in Lewis.
When were Rehoboth Shores and Tall Pines acquired by your employer?
Both properties were acquired in the mid-80s, this year we are celebrating at Tall Pines our 25th anniversary.
Let's talk about Tall Pines for a second. Describe that park, if you will.
Okay. Tall Pines consists of 480 seasonal sites. It also consists of 103 mobile home sites in two sections, or in three separate sections, and we also have transient RV sites as well.
Is it your view, based on your experience, that RVs and campers and mobile homes can coexist peacefully?
Well, yes. Well, in the 13 years that I've been regional manager and manager at 12 Pines Campground, we haven't had any problems with RV and mobile home residents coexisting. In fact, on Long Neck Road, we already have Leisure Point, which is a mixed community of mobile homes and RVs, as well as Oak Forest, which is also mobile homes and RVs as well.
Both those communities have been full for years?
Yes.
To your knowledge, there are no vacant available RV sites or campsites in the Long Neck area?
Not in the Long Neck area, and not at Tall Pines either.
In your opinion, based on your experience with Tall Pines, does a mixed RV, campground, mobile home community work well in terms of impacts on property values?
Yes. We find that, particularly at Tall Pines, that because of the amenities we're able to provide at the campground, which are extensively more than we have at Rehoboth Shores at this point, the both tenants, both RV and mobile home tenants, are able to take have benefit of all of the amenities that we have available to them. We have all kinds of community events. We have weekly theme weekends. There's just a lot that goes on in an RV community versus just a mobile home community, and both residents of the RV and mobile home sections benefit from this as well.
Let's move on and talk about market conditions in Rehoboth Shores.
Okay.
Can you tell us what's been going on the last several years?
Well, I have a handout here. In the last 3 years, first off, Rehoboth Shores consists of 494 total lots. In the last 3 years, in 2009, we managed to rent three lots. In 2010, we managed to rent one lot. So far this year, nothing. We have not been able to rent any lots. In addition to that, we have had, in 2009, 17 repossessed homes. In 2010, 15 repossessed homes. And as of March, we are now looking at five already repossessed homes in Rehoboth Shores.
How many lots have been rented in 2011?
In 2011, none so far.
So in slightly more than 2 years, a total of how many lots have been leased?
Three.
And the number of repossessions?
The total number of repossessions has been 32, of which Rehoboth Shores owners and have purchased 30 of those repossessed homes.
And I've got a question while we're on this topic, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm.
You've got all these vacant lots over these years. During this period, did you adjust your rates?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we froze our rates.
Froze them. So that didn't adjust them much. You just stopped.
We just froze. We did not increase them.
Because normally there's all these automatic increases. You just basically stopped.
We just stopped.
And it's not your opinion that they're still too high? Maybe they.
No.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we did a market survey of the area on Long Neck Road, and if you could, if you turn over to the second page here, you'll see our beginning lot rents in Rehoboth Shores start at $280, Bay City is $460, Leisure Point is 501, and Potnets is 485. So it's not our lot rents that are the problem. It is the mobile home market that has gone flat. Over the past several years, we have had...
Now, I did see some pictures earlier, and I'm assuming that some of them are Rehoboth Shores, and I'm familiar with some of the other parks and stuff. So could it be maybe the appearance of the way the park is versus the appearance of other parks, why some are more attractive and more appealing? Because kind of the marketplace takes people to...
I understand what you're saying, Mr. Cole. And in the past two years, we've had to take... And we've had to purchase 30 repossessed homes in Rehoboth Shores. And some of those homes, a lot of those homes are still, were still sitting there, were not ours at the time, and they were in the process of being repossessed. We can't touch them. Okay. And that's what happens to repossessed homes in a mobile home community, is that they become trash holes.
Right.
There's nobody there to take care of them. The lender has no obligation to take care of them while they're there. So, you know, it's up to us to take care of it. And we have gone out of our way to enhance and to help protect the community by purchasing those mobile homes. We have renovated them. We're in the process of also renting them. So we are providing additional... that's just the way the market has gone now. Mobile homes are not being sold extensively in Sussex County. A lot of the dealers have been closing up or consolidating.
Well, everybody's having problems.
Yes, everybody's having problems. And mobile homes have been impacted extremely in the Sussex County area. If you look here on our comparison, on the comparison sheet that I've provided, a person could buy a stick-built home on land, real property, and pay less than they would at Rehoboth Shores, Bay City, Leisure Point, and Potnets for a $175,000 home versus $43,000 on rented property. The reason is interest rates are so much higher.
For your product?
For mobile homes, yes. Right. And if you can find banks that would lend the money, the people purchasing the mobile homes have got to have an extremely clean and high credit score.
Is it the same type of high interest if it's on privately on land that they would own?
It would be somewhat less if it was on private land, but not much. The other difference is, too, is that mobile homes depreciate in value. So as you can see at the top here, looking at starting out at $43,000 at an interest rate of 18%, by the time you get all the way to the bottom after they've paid it off after 15 years, it's only worth 75% of what it was. That, given the, you know, that's, you know, all things being fair, if they've maintained the home, they've made additions to the home.
Let's talk about interest rates and credit facilities. What's out there right now for mobile home purchase and placement on a leased lot?
There's hardly anything out there right now as far as there are very few, let's say, banks in the area that are financing mobile homes right now.
On leased lots?
Especially on leased lots.
What's a beginning interest rate for someone with good credit?
Beginning interest rate would be, at best, 14%.
And with poor credit?
As high as 21%.
If you could continue with your little chart there, the conclusions, I think, are revealing.
Well, as I was saying, over the period of 15 years, most mobile homes are only financed for 15 years. And at the end of the 15 years, once it's paid off, the value has decreased from what they originally paid for. Again, given the fact that they would have maintained the home. As a stick-built home, it doubles in value over the period of time. Again, all things being fair, given the fact that the person who owns the stick-built home on land has maintained the home. So you've got a difference here of personal property versus real property. mobile homes being personal property, consider personal property, stick-built homes being real property. And there's a difference in equity. We see a lot more people who are moving in the direction of stick-built or putting RVs or mobile homes onto private land, not onto rented property. It's just not happening, and it's, you can ask any mobile home owner in Sussex County, what's going on? Most of them are empty. You go over to Oak Orchard area. Some of those mobile home parks are deserted. The homes have been pulled off. In our effort to keep Rehoboth Shores a viable community, we've had to purchase mobile homes and put on vacant lots. We also purchased repossessed homes to try and keep the community intact.
There was some testimony at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting about the lack of affordable housing available in this area. Can you talk briefly about that?
Well, we have at Rehoboth Shores, we still have 80 vacant lots available. Now at 3 per year, if we rent 3 every 3 years or 2 years, you know, we've got plenty of vacant lots. In addition, we're providing rental units because people cannot get financing for mobile homes. The market has gone to rentals. People can't afford to pay for mobile homes or any other type of housing, then they're going to rentals, and that's what we are providing, affordable housing through rentals of mobile homes that we currently have.
The combination of vacant lots and homes available for rent is what in Rehoboth Shores?
We had a total of 84 rental units available. Currently, we have 32 available for rent. So immediately, as soon as we started rehabilitating the repossessed homes, and we also added 32 additional homes to the community and started renting them, took off. So at this point, we have 32 available for rent.
And 80 vacant lots.
And 80 vacant lots, yeah.
Did you make a presentation to the homeowners at Rehoboth Shores?
Yes, I did.
Can you point council to what was presented?
In the project booklet, we made a presentation last fall, I believe it was in October, to the Rehoboth Shores mobile home residents, and that would be in section N of your project booklet.
What is it?
N.
N?
I like
N,
it
as in Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
As in N. N as in N, okay.
Did that presentation include proposed rules and regulations for the RV park campground?
Yes. It also included rules and regulations that we have converted, that we currently use at Tall Pines Campground, and that would be in section L of your project booklet as well.
What months of the year would the RV park campground operate?
We would be open from April 1st to October 31st. All utilities would be cut off, the area would be closed off, and no additional residents would be allowed into the area.
It's the applicant's wish that there be no transient campers, only seasonal?
We do not wish to have any overnight camping, any overnight campers, strictly seasonal. And those seasonal campers would be RVs only. We would not allow any type of park models in that area.
You are familiar with our recent history on campgrounds where the council has been requiring, as I read in one of your things here, a certain percentage of transient sites.
Yes, and I am aware of that.
And there was a reasoning behind that. I mean, it was basically feeling that a campground was typically traditionally, you know, for transient type of traffic, and there's, I know, a need for transient sites because everybody's converted to seasonal sites.
Converted to seasonal sites.
Which ends up being another permanent, you know, spot. So anyway, I've always said if you want to have an RV park or, you know, campground, have a campground. But if you make it all strictly seasonal, that's when everybody comes to the beach anyway, because even my neighbors are only here seasonally.
Seasonally.
And I don't care how big the house is. So
it's still
we
an
want
impact.
To minimize the you know, there are concerns about traffic on Long Neck Road. We want to minimize the traffic on Long Neck Road. Keeping it seasonal would be the best way to go to keep a minimum amount of traffic from going up and down Long Neck Road. In addition, the residents of Rehoboth Shores are concerned about, you know, crime. Seasonal sites, the residents of seasonal sites would be subject to a credit check and a background check, just as all the other residents in Rehoboth Shores currently are.
Is that your practice at Tall Pines as well?
Yes, it is.
Let's talk briefly about amenities that exist at Rehoboth Shores.
Yes. On page 3 of the handout that I gave you, we have a list of amenities available at Rehoboth Shores and at Tall Pines Campground. Currently at Rehoboth Shores, we have a community building, playground, basketball court, pavilion, a pool, which is rarely used. We have boat docks, 70 total. We just installed 2 years ago floating docks. We got rid of the old docks, and we made a rather large investment in floating docks. Last year, only 37 of those were rented. We also have a crabbing pier and a beach.
Can you explain why there are more amenities at Tall Pines than at Rehoboth Shores?
Because of the RV nature, the camping nature that we of an RV park, we are able to provide additional amenities that campers generally like. Also, because we have 480 seasonal sites there, and the residents that we have there, we're able to provide. And this year, we installed an 18-hole mini golf course, fitness room, and we'll be doing bicycle rentals as well. We have planned weekends, activities, theme weekends, movies, bingo, and all of that. So Tall Pines is more of a destination type of campground. We're trying to make it a destination type of campground, even though we are close to the beach and all the other amenities up and down Route 1. We do provide all of these additional amenities and services to our RV tenants, and they are available as well to the mobile home tenants.
Were the amenities that exist in Rehoboth Shores designed with the 260 lot undeveloped area in mind?
Yes, the pool, the boat docks, the playground, the pavilion, all of that area was designed with the 260 mobile home lots in mind at the time they were built. So at that time, we were planning to have additional 260 mobile home lots, and so everything was planned and built to those specifications.
Will there be an on-site manager and office for this campground?
Yes, we are planning to have an on-site, a separate office.
Excuse me. Our current office is located right at the entrance here. Rather than create any type of backup onto Long Neck Road, we have planned an office for the RV section right back in the RV section, and there will be an on-site manager just for the RVs.
What additional security will be provided?
We are intending to put in gates, security gates. We have security gates. Our property at Tall Pines is gated, and residents all have cards that will allow them access in and out. We currently have roving security, and we'll be adding additional security for the RV section as well.
If this project is developed, how many additional employees will Rehoboth Shores have?
I can see that we would probably require at least 6 additional employees. And as time goes on, if we're able to add amenities, activities, and whatnot, we will need additional employees for those as well.
David, have you had occasion to look at the petition that was submitted to the Planning and Zoning Commission objecting to this application?
Yes, I did.
Can you speak to those objections very briefly?
Well, there were 3 basic objections to our plan, and those were as follows. One was background checks and credit checks, and we intend to do that for all of the RV residents. The seasonal RV residents, just like we do at Rehoboth Shores. So we don't need to worry about that. They're worried about traffic. Well, DelDOT has basically told us that 260 mobile home lots would create more traffic than 367 RV sites, because they're only there so many months a year, and they're not always there all the time. And the other objection that they had was crime. Well, there's crime everywhere, particularly down in the Long Neck area. It comes from outside. It's not from inside. But because we'll be doing background checks on all of these people, as long as it's seasonal, we will be able to keep that crime in check, along with our additional security measures.
That's all I have of David.
Could you speak to looking at from an assessment type of argument, I guess, or angle? When you had your 200 and some manufactured home lots, as a home comes in, the county gets assessments from that, plus we get assessments from the land. So and those fee placement fees when things get placed, right? If that, I'm mistaken. And many of those fees help fund different things. I know that when you have our placement fee, I think helps the libraries and things of that nature, and other you know, monies that we collect will help other services. And obviously a campground of this size, if you will require emergency services from time to time, paramedics, et cetera, et cetera. So it seems the only thing that the county will be benefiting from this additional density, which will be, you know, the people will be there during the height of the season, which is when we have all our, you know, problems. Are they going to be paying their fair share, contributing? So what would we get out of a campground site versus the manufactured home site? What are the benefits to the county, let's say?
I think you've answered your own question.
What was that? I don't think I did.
Close your eyes and what do you see, Mr. Cope?
Close my eyes?
What do you see?
What do I see? It's dark.
You see nothing.
No, it's dark.
That's probably the benefits the county get from campers and RVs, because there's no placement fee. Because they're not permanently placed on the site.
I know that. I know. I'm just saying, there's a revenue stream, more of a revenue stream from what you currently is zoned, as opposed to...
This is not. The only benefit would be to local merchants and tradespeople with the additional money spent in the community.
Yeah, but people are people. If there's a house full of...
The answer is, close your eyes, what do you see? Nothing.
I guess that's a good answer.
Yeah. Thanks, David. As you know, there is no opposition, rebuttal to opposition testimony. I want to make a few observations before I quit. I want to emphasize that no mobile home lot in the developed portion of Rehoboth Shores is threatened in any way. No lots will be eliminated. Lord knows the owner wishes that 80 lots that are out there, there are developed, for which he's paying water and sewers assessments quarterly, would be rented, but they're not. As DelDOT has said, and as the county engineer has observed, this project is less impactive on Long Neck than a 260-lot year-round mobile home community. As the letters from the owners of Leisure Point and Oak Forest make clear, there is a demand and there is no supply of RV sites and campground lots. This would help meet that demand. Plus has no objection. And the State Department of Tourism has a letter of support in your project booklet. Infrastructure is either available or in place. One thing I know Mr. Cole loves to talk about is precedent, and there is none here, because to my knowledge, and I challenge Lawrence on this subject, I don't believe there's a developed mobile home community in the county with 51 vacant acres of land in it. And again, these acres are undeveloped. The threat of conversion, which is something I heard at the public hearing expressed by some of the opposition, can't occur here because nothing's being converted. Conversion occurs when an existing mobile home community is proposed to be put to another use. This 260 lot section doesn't exist. It's not there. As I was saying to Mr. Cole earlier, I don't know how many of you remember what happened at Sierra Mobile Home Park in the mid-80s, but the owner of that park signed a contract to sell it to some people from Maryland. The people from Maryland got the bright idea that they were going to condominiumize the community. And Mrs. Deaver, you know Sierra is a fully developed community. And under that condominium regime, they were going to force the residents to buy their lots at some remarkably high prices. Not surprisingly, the residents reacted, went to the General Assembly, and there is now a pretty good set of statutes on the books that prohibit mobile home conversion, mobile home park conversion, unless a whole host of steps. A whole host of steps are followed. This requires the authorization not only of the Attorney General's office, it requires an agreement among the residents. The statute is long and involved, but it is Title 25, Chapter 71, if anybody cares to look. This is not that situation. Nothing is being converted here because it doesn't exist. We're talking about development of 51 acres of undeveloped ground. That's all I have. Thank you.
I have a question. What do these units look like? Are you talking about mobile homes or motor homes or what?
I'd have to ask Mr. Pelosic that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, how much? I'm trying to figure out.
They could consist of trailers, and generally they do consist of trailers. Some have slide outs on them. But they could also consist of motor homes as well. We do have a few people who bring their motor homes down, leave it there, and then they take it out and go on to Florida.
Mm-hmm. They usually have a car in tow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
While you're up there, I got a silly question maybe, but at your current campground in Tall Pines,
mm-hmm.
do any of your campers have cable TV and landlines to their campsites?
We are in the process of installing cable TV right now. Comcast has, we have made an agreement with Comcast, and they're in the process of installing cable. There are currently telephone lines, but nobody uses them anymore because everybody has cell phones. Okay. So we are putting in cable.
Does anybody have additions on their campers?
Additions, because Tall Pines is 40 years old,
right.
It is a non-conforming
use.
There's no campground. So some of those homes do have additions that do not conform to the now required, the new requirements. However, as they are being replaced, we are making those the new residents replace any or tear down any type of addition that is non-conforming.
Would this new campground have additions permitted to their campers?
Well, the code allows for a storage shed, and we can also allow a removable canopy or screen room.
Can I add to that? The ordinance basically says it has to be manufactured for camping purposes. So there is additions of a product called Silver Top.
Which
actually
Coleman
manufactured
produces,
for camping purposes.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're easily removable. They just butt up to the unit.
Mm-hmm. Other questions?
Hey, any other questions from council?
And you saying that other mobile home parks are have vacancies?
Yes.
They do?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of vacancies out mm-hmm. there. We were not just affected by all of the repossessions. Mm-hmm. You have Potnets. You've got all several other mobile home communities. You've got Bay City right next to us. It has mm-hmm. more than 50 vacant lots available.
Mm-hmm. That's across the board, Jen. I mean, everybody's got mm-hmm. vacancies. Everybody's got problems.
Okay. I have a question. You make reference to 80 vacant sites. That's in addition to the 260 of the sites you're proposing
yes,
to.
Yes, those 80 convert. Vacant sites are already constructed, and there are no homes on them currently.
And Mr. Cole, it may be small comfort, but every quarter the owner pays a quarterly sewer assessment and a quarterly water assessment.
Well, I should hope so. We don't want to get them on the list. Of
which we would
don't
be
pay.
Doing with the RVs as well.
Other questions?
Thank you. Anyone here to speak in favor of this application? Seeing none. Anyone here in opposition? Okay. Why don't we start over on that side, sir?
But as one leaves, please, the other one, get up and start coming down. We'll keep it moving.
My name's Kyle Campbell, and I live at 25938 Juniper Street in Bay City, right next to Rehoboth Shores. Retired from the military. I just quit Potnet Security a few months back. I worked there part-time. I've seen the crime on Long Neck. Every night I worked midnight to 8 for 7 years. There's a lot of crime. A friend of mine just had his house broken into last weekend, along with 3 other ones. We've been here almost 10 years. When the seasonals come here, the water pressure drops drastically. I'm not an engineer, but obviously when people come, they're going to use more water than, like myself, when I'm here in the wintertime, all winter. The water drops drastically. And as far as the traffic, if you come down on Long Neck, Memorial Day weekend, July 4th, Labor Day, when they have the big shindig down here on Long Neck every September with the sales and stuff, you cannot even get out on Long Neck Road. It takes you from Bay City to Route 24 is approximately 3 miles, maybe 4 miles. It takes you 45 minutes to get that far. There's only one traffic light. That's how much traffic is on Long Neck. You're expecting to put 300 and some sites in. So that's roughly, they're going to bring their families, their friends. So it's just not 300 cars. It's going to be maybe 600 cars, trucks, whatever. As far as security, they have one security guard over there that I know of for 24 hours a shift. He drives around in a pickup truck. In the summertime, he wears a t-shirt because I'd sat over in Potnets in the maintenance yard numerous nights when I worked and saw him. He just sits there. That's all he did that I seen. Whether he drives around or not, I can't say for sure. But I'd sit there 3/4 of an hour already, and the man just sits there. So he's not driving around. It's a picket, split railing fence the whole length. So anybody can come in. I've seen kids running from Potnets over to there to Rehoboth Shores and back at 2, 3, or 4 o'clock in the morning. Now, if it was my kid, they would have been in bed at 10 o'clock. You know, I understand there's a curfew over there. That curfew don't hold water, really. I've seen all this. I've been here. And I just think it's a bad idea to put the campground. You're going to have fires, campfires. There's no trees there. The smoke's going to go in whatever direction the wind's blowing, which is mostly over in Bay City area because it blows from the west to the east. And, you know, I'm just opposed to it completely.
Let me ask you something. Where you live, are there a lot of full-time people, or are there some summer
people?
We
have roughly 30% full-time,
mm-hmm.
and then... in this, probably starting within the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just going to get loaded with people there. And the we have 45 vacant homes, not 51. We have 45 empty lots, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
45 empty lots right now. We have probably 50-some houses for sale. The people don't want to, I don't want to live there no more, to tell you the truth. Not that I can't afford the rent. I can afford the lot rent. My mortgage is 7%, not no 14%. So where he's getting that at, I have no idea. And I got a 30-year mortgage when I first moved down here. So where all that's coming from, I have no idea. But, you know, it's just, I think it's a bad idea overall.
But
yeah.
Somehow it's going to be more profitable to have the campers than to rent the sites for homes. Somehow.
Well, it's just the money making thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
I'm trying to figure out how it is. When
he said to close your eyes, That's what he was trying to tell you.
Oh, okay. I'm a little slow.
Yeah, but when you have 70% of the homes where you live are seasonal people anyway.
Yeah, at least 70, yeah. Maybe mm-hmm. even a little more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would say probably the ones in our place, almost half of them are for sale. Nobody can sell their house.
Mm-hmm.
I had mine up for 120. I have an addition. I have a beautiful double wide. I'm lucky I can get 50 for it today. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just the way they all are like that. And matter of fact, where I live at, the owner, I talked to her the other day. They used to have campers there back in the 70s. She said it's the worst thing she ever had. And we have a big field there, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many acres. It's a few acres. She said she would never go along with this.
No.
She would never put campers in.
Why?
She just said she wouldn't. She said one reason she did say was a lot of drinking, a lot of crime, a lot of problems. She just said so. It was too much. She just wouldn't have it no more.
I do a lot of drinking, and I don't camp.
I don't care, you know. I mean, I don't care who drinks or does what, but she said she had more trouble with them people than she did with the people living there full time.
Thank you, sir.
Sir, could I get your last name? I missed it.
Campbell.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak?
Come on down. Come on. Keep moving.
Form a line. There you go.
Yeah, there. Get a line. Yeah. That's right. Ma'am, get ready. Be aggressive. Get right down there.
Hi, I'm Neil Dickerson. I live at 34716 Judge Jetty Drive, Potnets Creekside. I just had a few questions because I've been attending all the meetings and it seems like the answers change every meeting. They failed to say it about Tall Pines. That was originally a RV park when it started, and then they converted over to the homes. He mentioned about the bathhouses. And if any of you were prior campers, you probably know that at 5 o'clock in a campsite, everybody coming off the beach, how in the world are you gonna handle 367 people running to a bathhouse that has a couple stalls?
We're gonna have two bathhouses.
Yeah, yeah. The amenities, I think when they pointed to the chart of here, I could be wrong, the paths, the trails that they allotted to, that seemed to be in the not in the park, but in the residential area. Is that accurate? Right.
I think they said that some of the amenities in the park will complement the camp,
okay,
this new development. So it's all going to be shared. I think shared amenities is my understanding.
I think
he showed the trail in the green area that separates the park from the campground and also in the open space.
The docking area at the back of the park, I think, will have 6 parking spots. So my question would be, where are they going to put the trailers
mm-hmm.
with all of these boats that they're going to bring in and dock and things like that? Is there an area set aside for the mm-hmm. for the trailers?
Is there a launching ramp there?
They say they have a docking ramp in the back.
Okay.
And I think it has 6 spots that you can mm-hmm. park. You're going to have 367 possible residents sharing the amenities of a private home community that these people pay high dollar for, that these people are going to come in, transient or not. I've been both the sides of the fence. And they're going to go in and get in the pool. The pool's probably not occupied now, I think, because they said it wasn't clean at the last meeting, the residents. But whatever it may be, 367 people in one pool, not counting the regular residents. That sounds like a hot tub. But it just seems it's not the time or the place to have an RV park put into a mobile home community. And I'll just leave you with one parting statement, question, or however you want to put it. You wake up one morning and you open your door and your wife go out to have a coffee and there's a fifth wheeler you're looking at. Is that what you pay the high dollar yearly rent for? Thank you.
Hey, thank you.
Next.
Ma'am? Somebody's, nope. Sorry, ma'am. You had to be moving. She was.
Moving again.
Hi, I'm Vicki Rollison. I live at 26196 Schooner Lane in Rehoboth Shores. I don't think that you guys are getting the total picture of what we were told in October. We were told that they would have a separate pool, that they would have separate amenities. What we have now, our community center, we can't even utilize because it's full of furniture that management has put in there storing.
The pool is full of furniture?
No, the community center.
Oh, the community center, okay.
The pool would probably get used more if the hours were better to accommodate the people that live there. Crime rate has gone up. It's decreased right now because it's summertime. But as soon as all the seasonals start coming back down, it'll increase again. We've had gun shootings. We have convicted felons in the park right now. There's criminals in the park. We're trying to clean it up, not add extra aggravation to it. I've lived there 7 years. In the 7 years that I've lived there, I've not seen one thing improve until the past 2 weeks. When we showed the pictures to the Planning and Zoning Board, things started getting cleaned up. The hedgerow, as you come down the main road at Rehoboth Shores, there's all the trees, and they were starting to hang over top of the road. We asked for 2 years to have them cut back. Guess what? They finally got cut back. But it's only because they're here and they want something. My thing is, I didn't move into an RV park. I moved into a mobile home community. And you're going to tell me I'm going to pay $353 a month to look at RVs? There's one entrance. They're coming right through my community to get to anything. They have to come through our houses to get to the pool. They have to come through our houses to get to where they're going to be camping. This is not fair to the homeowners. I've heard that they've only rented 4 lots in 3 years. Well, 4 years ago, my daughter tried to rent a lot and was told they were unavailable. That's a management issue. The park, if you talk to different manufacturers, salespeople, they won't even recommend our park because of the way it looks, because it's so ran down. That's where the problems come in. It's not... You got to fix what you got before you can start something else. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll let the lady in the sweater here go.
Good afternoon. I'm Roberta Hemrick. I live in McNichol Place in Lewis. I guess the first question I would ask is, which came first, the chicken or the egg? They brought up other communities that I believe started out as campgrounds or RV parks, and then manufactured housing was added. That's a big difference from taking a community where people purchased their homes and signed their leases thinking they were going to live in a manufactured home community, and now it may turn into a campground. They also brought up Sea Air. We all know what happened with Sea Air and what a nightmare that has turned into. I don't want to see that happen to the folks that live in Rehoboth Shores. The current residents, I'm pretty sure they pay for their water and their sewer. Who's going to be paying for the water and the sewer usage of the RVs? I don't think they're going to be hooked up to meters. We've talked about security, we've talked about traffic. As a person that's camped all my life, you don't wind up with just the one car that comes with the campground. You have at least two, and then you have other folks that come to visit. This is party time, so you're talking more than 600, okay? You're talking a whole lot more. They also spoke of one of the reasons that financing is so high in these communities is because, let me see, I'm sorry, I'm getting confused here. I've got so many notes. Okay, I'm not even going to go there. I think that pretty well covers what I wanted to say. But I do agree, I think that this whole thing is a very, very bad idea, and I would hope that you rule against it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's 260 sites, Mr. Link, is that right, right now, mobile home sites? And they want to convert it to 367 campsites, is that right?
That's what they stated.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, good afternoon, my name's Debbie Irwin. I live on Baby Lane in Rehoboth Shores, and I'm the one who's pestered a number of people. In the past week and a half, I took it upon myself to sit down with the phone book and call a large number of the stores and shop owners in the Long Neck area. Now, obviously, they don't want to be blighted, so they would not wish to choose to give their name. I couldn't ask for things like that from them. Their general consensus was that during the busy season from April to October, generally they do have to add some additional part-time help, which is usually youth, into their businesses to help with the demand. Yes, this is going to increase the demand and increase their profits, but it's also only limited profits. This is not going to help their stores come the end of October back to April 1st, when our stores really desperately need the help. If any of you are self-employed, you know that once seasonal people leave, we're on our own. So this is making it not a really true beneficial thing, as they would like you to believe, to the area. The other thing would be, again, the traffic. They've all mentioned it, does not need to be repeated. I've only lived in the mobile home park for a couple of years. Now, I myself am a self-employed business owner. If I ran my business the way the park is run, I probably would have a very difficult time maintaining my business. True, it's economic times, and everybody is hurting financially, whether we live in a $300,000 home or we live in a mobile home. But the variables in the rent in that park go from 530 something a month to rent your lot at $99. What are you going to get in there for $99 a month? How can you tell me that you have checked out all these people financially and criminally, put them in there, but yet the police are there every weekend? Now, you're complaining because you can't rent things out? Well, if people are not going to pay 500 and something a month and live in and try to make it a nicer place, why would you want something that could, somebody who could only afford $99 living there? What does that tell you? What kind of person are you now getting in there? And if you were so business swabby, then why would you take and rent out mobile homes when, gee, if you own them, wouldn't it make more sense to say, okay, guy, listen, $5,000 down, 12% interest, I'll hold your mortgage. Maybe then they take better care of what they add, instead of considering a rental and making it just one more dump. You don't take your maintenance men and have them go in and straighten up anything. So here we go, we keep going back to poor management, maintenance, management, and maintenance. As far as their floating docks, there's issues there. Could they say they don't have them rented out? Why? Because you could only rent it out for a year, a season. You have to come up with the full $800 to rent out that dock. Well, gee, if you're that shy of money and your business is hurting, wouldn't it make more sense to have somebody sign a contract and rent it on a month to month? You already have a sign there that states you're going to yank their stuff out of there if they're where they're not supposed to be. So, I mean, you know, these things are just management things that are costing them money and making them run to something that's not an answer. Again, if you can't handle the 200 and some lots that are empty, the 500 and some families that are there, what makes you think that they're going to be able to handle 600 more people there? Our pool. There is a rope that goes from the deep end to the shallow end. There are floating devices, little round plastic floating devices. They were smashed and broken, just waiting to cut somebody's arm. When the management was told, nothing was done. When the water faucet was falling off, it took a week to get this straightened out. They take less care of their own things than what they try to demand of the park owners. The manager drives around, goes back to the office, sends everybody their little nasty notes, and that's the total of it. There are people that are gone throughout the year. They're just as much as like having campers there, but they own the mobile home, they pay the lot 12 months out of the year, they live in Pennsylvania, they come down for the summer, they bring their friends. Well, who's checking out their friends? Or their friends' children? What's there as far as security to keep kids out of the park? There's drug deals that go on all the time in there that you can just literally see. There are police there all the time. Why would somebody want to come in and rent there if we can't get a little more control, make it a lot nicer place, and make it a place people want to be? Now, if you take and you call Atlantis Homes, Oakwood Homes, Manufactured Housing, and many of them, like I did again this week, their answer is that their sales are down. Most of their sales have been replacements for people. And when they do not recommend our park, very simply because, as they put it, the management, the care, and the appearance of the park. Now, how come Potnets can go out and take X amount of their lots and put beautiful homes on them by a beautiful pool with fountains and ask X amount of dollars and they get it? Why? Because they're properly managed. And I can't help if you people do not think that we count because we can't come up with something on your books, your bylaws, or your zoning to go against these people, other than the fact that we're human beings who invested money into homes with the hopes that we would have a decent place to live and not go to a campsite. Now, if I can go out and buy a $30,000 RV to park someplace 9 months out of the year and then pay you to let me keep it there during the winter, cover it up because I didn't want to haul it out, then why can you not make it so people want to pay $30,000 down at Oakwood Homes to buy one of their homes down there and put it in a lot that you're now offering for $99 that I'm paying $500 for? So it's economics, management, and I leave you with that, and I hope you consider us as human beings that count for something.
When you bought your home, was there any indication that the vacant land would be converted?
None whatsoever. Okay. And all I can say is I would only hope that I wish we could afford an attorney for our homeowners association. And right now, we cannot do that financially. We are strapped just like anybody else. But I would hope that you would consider this. There's got to be somewhere in that little piece of paper that says this is a violation to us because we were never told when we signed our agreements that it was going to be a mixed bag to live with. So why shouldn't we have that money available to us in that little fund, that $8,000 that I should get to move my double wide out of there? What's he going to do if people did decide to get together and use that money and start moving mobile homes out? Come back to you and ask for him to put in mobile homes into the sections where we're all moving out of? Common sense and dollars. Thank you.
Thank you. Sir?
Mr. President, members of council, thank you for your time. I would just
state your name, please.
Do I have to?
Yes.
John Walsh. I live in Colonial East and off of Route 1. I have a few points to make. First of all, there is no problem that I have or I think anyone here has with RV parks. I think they're great, they're fabulous for those who like them. My concept of an RV park or roughing it or camping it is going to a Holiday Inn as opposed to a Marriott. But for those who like them, I think it's great. My comment is similar to something that the lady just before me said. This is an attempt to change the rules of the game after the cards have been dealt. These people purchased their homes and are renting their land in a manufactured home community, not a mixed use. And now they want to change the rules. I think if you walked out your front door, if you lived in a development or a subdivision and discovered that those vacant lots across the street were going to be an RV park, I don't think you'd be too happy. And this is what's trying to be done to these folks just because they live in a manufactured home community. The comments about traffic data, about how much less traffic is going to be impacted, you know, on Long Neck Road, I'm reminded of an old statement. Figures don't lie, but dissemblers can figure. If you take the amount of traffic over 12 months, very possibly that would be a lesser amount of traffic. You had 107, I believe, sites in season. Traffic doesn't go down, it goes through the roof. And this is when Long Neck Road has its worst traffic problems. And this is when they want to impact the traffic even further. I think something that we have to consider too is the comments of the homeowners that spoke before the Planning and Zoning Commission. And I suggest strongly you take a look at their testimony. If all of the things that management stated were true, I would think there would have been people pounding down the doors to say how wonderful this was. There has not been one person in that community who is in favor of it. Not one. And you may have seen and heard already here the fierceness of the opposition and the fact that some of what was presented to the homeowners at their meeting and in point of fact was presented to Planning and Zoning a couple of weeks ago, the presentation changed somewhat. And this is a problem. All right, it seems that they're trying to adjust the facts to fit the audience. And I am very concerned about this. Just the comments about the management of that community, and you can look at Planning and Zoning's testimony, to put it mildly, was not complimentary. I would hold a certain amount of Morton's iodized salt as to some of the statements that were made here. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Mr. Walsh, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
There's a new idea now of a 6-foot-high earthen berm, 50-foot wide, between the regular homes and the campers. Do you think that would make a difference?
Well, I can point out something that where I live, there's an RV park directly behind my community. There is a 50 to 100 foot space. There is a chain link fence. There is a little bit of a ditch or a depression in the ground. Mm-hmm. The folks that live right along that area, while they say most of the people there are very nice, they have people going through those fences, under the fences, over the fences, to go hither and yon because it's simpler to cut through our community than it is to go around to, I call it Wawa route, but I think you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. So the idea of that berm being there, and of course before it was, oh, it's a split rail fence, that's our security. Now they're saying, oh no, that's not really security, it's going to be a berm. Well, I think even I could get over a berm. I mean, unless it's going to be vertical.
Are you saying that that these people come in with these RVs are more or less a tourist and they're creating a more traffic problem than would be if they lived there?
The people that come into RV communities, and I've been in some RV communities, and as I said, there's one next to me. Most of these folks are nice, they're there to have fun, they're there for maybe a weekend or to relax. As you know, Councilman, those RVs are relatively small. Most of the time these folks are there, they're spent outside, all right, or as much as they can, they spend outside. And so they're going to relax, they're going to have guests over, they're going to party, they're going to have music. And in an RV park, that's what everyone expects. All right, I mean, that's, you know, naturally.
So you're thinking they create more of a traffic problem, is that what you're saying?
They will create more of a traffic problem in season, because first of all, they were saying that, oh no, the plan is not for transient. But then they also said, but that's in our plan just in case we're forced into it. So in the plan that was already submitted, they're allowing for transients. And if you have transients, you're going to have the car coming in, you're going to have the trailer, maybe you're going to have the motor home, mm-hmm. and you might have a car tagging along behind it. So during the season, the traffic isn't going to improve, it's going to worsen dramatically. Off season, they might be right, there'll be less traffic.
So what you should do is go before the state that's spending all this money on tourism, trying to get people just to travel through here and get on our highways and stopping up for highways, because the people actually live here doesn't create the problem, it's the people that's going through. So you need to go talk to the state and tell them that this is a bad place to come because tourism is creating a problem with our highways.
Well, sir, it's not just the state. I believe the county also spends quite a bit of money trying to get people to move down here. So the fault, I agree, in some cases is with the state, but it's also with the county.
I'm not aware of our county spending a lot of money for tourism. I know it's a lot spent on state, but okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Sorry. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
President, my name is Vincent Rice. I live in 33346 Lakeshore Circle in Lakeside. So I would like to say a few things, not about the residents, you know, because they've spoke eloquently before the planning and zoning about possible problems they have in breach of contract, but I don't want to go there. As an engineer for over 40 years, I'd like to address facts. I like that. Since this meeting started today, we've had sirens three times, have gone by outside three times. My community is, Lakeside, is probably 70% or more full-time. Average age, 58. The ambulances were there this week three times. In Labor Day 2006, the ambulance came for me. I had a heart attack on Long Neck Road. It's a two-lane road. Trying to get through there, as we said, during the boat show, Labor Day, thank God I had the attack at 2 o'clock in the morning. But again, all this bad tourism, this is not bad tourism. We like the tourists. But what's this doing in this area, they are tourists because RVs are typically not living here for 7 months because they have a home somewhere. We've come, we live here. We're mostly retired and live here 24/7. We do bring our cars, but we don't go out that often. Sometimes I'm in my house 2 and 3 days because we have everything there. Or we stay in the park on our golf carts to the pool, to fish in our lake. We don't have to leave. Where if you're a tourist or you came down to camp and have fun and down the shore, you're out. You're going on the roads all the time. And if we say they only have the RV, that's all. The RV is bigger than a car. So as they go down the road and I'm down the road, they're taking up more room. And typically they have a car behind them if they're even pulling it in only one vehicle. So now they're taking up three, okay? And their friends come and there is more people going there. Again, numbers, I love the numbers. At the zoning board presentation, they talked about the stick house versus the modular. And they said it was only $100 more to have a stick home, so they're gonna buy these. Now all of us that have ever bought a stick home know you have to put down a lot of money. You don't walk in with no down payment. And it costs you 5 to 10, 20% for the settlement costs. And the settlement costs on manufactured home is very low because, again, it's personal property. So who can afford those things to buy the stick home? It's a lot more money. But we've bought here, many of us retired, to live in these numbers. And what they've done with the numbers to say, okay, as we've heard so many times, 367 is less than 260. not in any math book I learned. The water and the electric will be higher during those times. It's like, let's move our meeting right now to New York. There's less traffic, but let's go during New Year's Eve. Let's move to New Orleans, but let's do during Mardi Gras. The summer is big, and all of us with the electric co-op have the power surge. We check on it. We've had blackouts, brownouts, without the tourists or whatever in the summer. We know that. Are they going to have those? Are they going to be aware of them and try to take care of those? And I can't believe that 260 hookups for water and electric will turn out to be less during that peak time of the summer of 367 water and electric. It won't. Again, 40 years I've been an engineer, and it's fun to play with numbers. My friend said it already. Figures don't lie. It was a great thing we engineers said, but certain people know how to figure. So they've worked with the numbers to make it say what you want. You can do that. People do that. I don't blame them. You want to make it look to your side. That's fine. That's fine. Okay. So we look at all these things, and I say that the permanent days and things that they're doing with the cars, you know, like I said, sometimes I have two cars, and we don't leave, and many of us only have one. But again, that one-lane road, if we're doing this, perhaps should be expanded because, God forbid, these emergency services can't get through. As I said, during this meeting, three sirens here outside. In my community last week, three ambulance calls that I heard, and I had one myself during Labor Day week. Thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good afternoon. My name is Tom Hinderleiter, not Hinderlitten, okay, as was stated before. That's H-I-N-D-E-R-L-I-T-E-R. I reside at 34469 Fleet Street, Potnets Bayside. I, like Vinny, look at numbers a little bit there, and I can't figure out how all these surveys and what have you, where you're going to get less with 360 as opposed to 260. I don't understand how you can say that this will have an economic impact on our areas there when you have an RV tourist for several months out of the year and not a full-time resident, or even a tourist that purchases a property that will have a ratable type of coming back to the county. Vinny showed the red light up there, which I think all of us hopefully would have. And I know if you go into your homes every once in a while, you'll see the red light come on like this here. Hey, cut back, whatever. Cut your computer off. Pull your plug on the TV, whatever. This happens a lot. It even happens now, and it's not even tourist season. As far as tourists, their numbers in sales, they have presently 80 available. Why not rent? If you're going to rent, you're going to have a rateable come back to you in the form of a tax of some sort. We welcome tourists. Now, I want us to close our eyes, as they said before, and I would like you to visualize the movie Caddyshack. And can you remember the scene where Ted Knight was standing on his sailboat ready to christen it? And here comes Rodney Dangerfield honking his horn and whizzes on by. Have you ever seen Massey's Landing on a weekend? Have you ever tried to launch a boat down there on a weekend? Have you ever seen the boats, the trucks, whatever, backed up all along Long Neck Road on a weekend? Now, if that's happening now, and we get 367 more people come here, which we don't discourage, come and buy. Don't rent a spot and say, goodbye, folks. Come and buy. But let's say these people coming, they have a big RV, maybe with a car there, or they have a car with an RV in back of it, and they park it there. Say, I'm going to rent it for the season. Now, what else comes with that? Me and my family and friends and what have you used to do the same thing. And what do you know happens? Well, let's bring the boat down. Where are you going to put the boat at? You're going to create a situation, for example, as I said, in Massey's Landing, alone. Have you ever gone to Seaside on a weekend? Seaside pot nets, set on the beach there. And just look at the boats going back and forth, the skidoo's going back and forth. How many accidents have they had out there in the past year? Perhaps the Coast Guard. I think we have maybe one or two deaths each year because of the traffic out there. And they're cutting back on the enforcement people, from what I understand, the fishing game, when I attended a seminar for boating. So, you know, we welcome tourism. But in this vein here, I don't see it happening. What about, as people have mentioned, the peace, the police, the fire, the EMTs, the element to, you know, respond. Now, if you look at Rehoboth Shores and you see on a given day people coming to turn in, and you'll see a radius there, you might be able to get three or four cars, I believe it is. And there is a little section there where you could pull, and cars will come to and fro until it's your turn to turn. Now picture on the weekend, a big RV, not one, because we got 367 that are going to be put in there. You realize with that kind of space wrapping all the way around, past the Bayside, past Lakeside, right on out, how far back up that's going to be? What kind of response you're going to get out of our EMTs, fire, or whatever? I ask you that. Come on down some weekend. Give me a call. Just come see it. Folks, you know, close your eyes, but vote no. That's what I say. Demand no support. You know, it's ridiculous. And my bottom line on this whole thing, and hearing all these people that come up from the other hearing too, is maybe this would be a viable situation to consider. But you can't fix something unless you've gone back and repaired the tire that you caused to go flat. That's what I say. Thank you, folks, for your time.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak?
In the back.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Barbara Duff, and I live in Rehoboth Shores. I bought down here 10 years ago to retire and have done so, but I am so sorry that I have moved in that park. 3 years ago, the condition of the park had gone down so bad in the past 10 years, I put my house up for sale. I called 7 different realtors out on Route 1, big-name realtors, and they were so excited because I have a nice double wide on a great big lot on the corner. I'm not too far from the beach and not too far from a pond. And they were so excited to list my house. And when I said Rehoboth Shores, they said, ma'am, we're sorry, we won't even come in there. We can get a house sold in Rehoboth Shores. When it goes to management to get approved, management statement was to them, well, I have a double wide up front for sale that's about less than a third for the rent that you're going to pay in the back that's all fixed up. I can rent you this one much, much cheaper. So they won't even list homes in Rehoboth Shores anymore. As far as security, we have been begging for full-time security for 10 years that I know of. We finally got a security guard last year who's excellent. He rides around the park. He's broke up a lot of gangs. He sent kids out of the park that don't belong there. We had a basketball court. Big kids from other parks came in and tore it down. That was never fixed. We had playground equipment. There was a merry-go-round that was broken and dangerous, and we complained about little kids getting hurt on it for over a year before they finally took it up and moved it. We've asked for funds to put in a nice playground for our children, so they have something to do in the afternoons. They didn't have the money. Let me see what else. As far as amenities, we have a beach, a very small parking space, very small beach. You get three or four golf carts and two cars, it's crowded. You can't get near it on a weekend now. And these kids are going to come down at the park. They're going to come in on a Friday night, and I've camped with my children, so I know what it's like. We camped at campsites. We went to Ocean City and Chestertown, all over the place. They come in on a Friday night. They're banging doors. They're unloading their cars, carrying them in their campers. They're building campfires. They're hollering back and forth after midnight. Hey, do you have charcoal, and can we borrow this, and did you guys bring this? And that's fine in a campground because that's what people expect. And the other parks they mentioned, especially Tall Pines, those parks were RV camps, as they've stated before. And those people that coincide well with them knew what they were moving into, and they're okay with that. And that's fine, but we're not okay with it. We signed leases for 5 years. The ones up front, they're renting. They only sign a lease for a year, and that's not fair to us. We're paying twice the amount of rent that they are. They get the same amenities that we get, which is nothing, basically. As far as the park, Tall Pines says what fun they have up there and what they do for their people, well, why don't they do it for Rehoboth Shores? The only thing they've given us in the past 20 years that I've talked to residents is the picnic last year. They gave us sandwiches and a piece of cake to tell us that they're going to put RVs or wanting to put RVs in where we live permanently. This is just not fair. We've had incidents in security. When we had a big flood a couple years ago, I had a lady call my house that lived down near the beach. She was panic-stricken. She wanted to get out. She said, I want to go to a motel. I can't even get to my car. Can you help me? I said, well, I have a little car. I can't drive down there. But I said, at that time, security was on guard, was on duty. I said, call security. He drove the Rehoboth Shore truck for security. She called him. He called management for permission to go take this lady out of her home. She said, absolutely not. You take that truck up front, you park it by the office, and you leave it there all night. This woman was hysterical, so I called the fire department, and they did send a truck in and go through and take a lot of people out into motels. There's no compassion for anybody that lives in this park. If you have a problem, I had a neighbor that's rent went up 15%. She had just gotten laid off and was looking for work, and she said, Barbara, I can't afford this. I said, well, go down and talk to office management. She went down, and the response she got was, I'm sorry about that. Give me your keys. We'll take your trailer. And that's what's happening to a lot of us. We are stuck in a park where we can't get out. And it's really sad because when we first moved in there, it was a very, very nice park. And now, in the last 2 weeks, is the only thing that's getting done. Our Homeowners Association built a pavilion, and we have 10 to 15 tables, picnic tables under there that we built. And on weekends, when the security guard goes home, because we've never had full-time security, we've been promised that for 5 years, when he goes home at 10 o'clock or midnight or whatever his shift is that day, the truck is parked out front by the office. Anybody going up and down Long Neck Road can see that his truck's parked there, so he's no longer on duty. So they start coming in from other parks. We've had gang fights, and as mentioned before, we've got cops in there every weekend. We've had our golf carts stolen. They take them to other parks, run around on them until they run batteries down or gas. And we just can't seem to get anything across. As far as what they're going to do, when they told us the meeting that they had when they gave us this picnic, that temporarily they were going to use our bathrooms. Well, we have two stalls in our community building for women and two for men. It was brought up in October the 16th at this picnic that one of the men's toilets wouldn't even flush. It was always overflowing. Well, they finally fixed that at the end of February this year. It took them 5 months to fix the toilet. They were going to get us more security right away. They were going to put in a speed bump down by the beach. They were going to trim the bushes, which they are now doing. We've been asking for 5 years in the back half to get security mailboxes, because we have the individual ones. The kids get in them, we find their mail, checks, and everything down in the woods. They play with it. We finally got the boxes put up in February of this year with the help of our men that are in the Homeowners Association. They had to help the maintenance men put the boxes up. We got a slip in our box that says from the post office, you can start using your box effective February the 26th, 2007. That was 3 years ago. These mailboxes laid down behind the shop in the rain. Now we have to spray WD-40 to get in our mailboxes because the keys are all rusted. And these were brand new boxes in 2007. They didn't have the time or the money to put them up. As far as their promises, we get all kinds of promises and they don't happen. So how do we know that they're going to put a fence up? And how do we know they're going to do new bathhouses and so forth? On a weekend, if we decide as a homeowners association to have something at the picnic tables, there's going to be 600 or 700 people trying to use them picnic tables because it's right at the end of the one section. I live in the back section. I have a small woods, not very deep, right behind air row of homes. And we live there year round. In the wintertime, I feed the birds on bird hangers. I have deer, possum, and raccoons that come up and eat bird seed under my feeders. And we do have wildlife back there. And there's gonna be 102 or 112, I forget, seasonal campers that are gonna be put back behind me. So it is gonna disrupt the wildlife. And there's a pond back there that the kids used to fish in, and there was fish in it. And it was a big thrill for them to come down and go fishing, and they'd a lot of times stop. We'd give them bait, worms, and minnows. And then when they dredged the canals, because the boats couldn't get in the canals, they're too shallow, they dredged, put a hole into the pond, and all the salt water's in the pond. So now there's no fish in it. They're dead. So what little bit of amenities we have, they get destroyed or they just break up and dissipate and we don't ever get them back. So we have nothing in our park, but we fight for everything we have to get. And I really hope that you don't allow this to go through. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you. What do you pay a year to live there?
I'm paying $569 a month right now. My neighbor's rent has all gone up 10 and 15%. I haven't gotten my rent raised yet.
$569? A month.
$569. For my lot, there's the people on the water are paying over $600, some of them $8. My lot rent will go up in July, and I'm sure after I speak it'll probably triple. But but anyhow, we can't afford to move. And yes, we could be buying homes with mortgages and be paying less than what some of us are paying lot rent. And when the lots go up, they go up. Maybe this one goes up 8%, neighbors will go up 10%. And I think it depends on whether she likes you or not.
I heard the number 280. I just wondered.
Well, if it's 280, it's up front in the rental, because I don't know of anybody that can pay that. I never paid that when I first moved in, and I bought a single wide, paid cash for it. And then a double wide across the street went up for rent, and I had never missed a rent payment in my life, and she charged me another $50 to move across the street to do a security check. So that's the kind of management we have in our park.
Thank you. Anyone else? Not seeing anyone. I was, Mr. President, I was given a note by Sandy Spence, and this was at 3:10. I kept time on this, as a matter of fact. The applicant started around 2:35, and at 3:10 she handed me a note and said the applicant took so long with her presentation that she had to leave for an important appointment. Therefore, she requested that the record be held open long enough for her to submit a statement in writing within 48 hours, or alternatively to enter her testimony presented by Gina Miss Serendino and Ms. Spence at the planning and zoning into the council hearing. In light of the fact that there was the comment about the time, the applicant started at 2:35, ended at 3:20, at which point the opposition started, and now it's 4:15. Mm-hmm. So they took a little longer.
you can weigh it, you can keep it open.
We can keep it open for just for her, can't we? I mean, just
to
just
if you wanted to keep it open for 48 hours.
Since she's put it, since she's put it in writing, we could just say it's closed except for that one piece of testimony.
And that's up to council.
And that would be in writing or?
In writing.
In writing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's unreasonable.
Is that a motion?
I'll make that motion. I don't believe that's unreasonable.
We have a motion and a second to close the public hearing with the exception that we will allow Ms. Spence up to 48 hours.
Yes.
To give us her written comments, correct?
To make that close of business on Thursday.
Okay. Close business on Thursday.
Close business on Thursday.
That's my motion.
Any questions on the motion? If not, we'll take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
I vote yes.
I'll make a motion. We defer.
Second. Motion to defer. Second. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote. Ms. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
I vote yes.
Thank you very much, folks. That's it.
Thank you.
Okay.
The last.
We have one last thing.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Last item of business, an ordinance providing for a six-month moratorium on applications for casino and or gambling or gaming venues in Sussex County. Mr. Lang?
Yes. On February 24th of 2011, the Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on this ordinance amendment. And to the record, the ordinance was summarized. It makes reference to the need for regulations on casinos, gambling, and gaming. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to the ordinance. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed the ordinance. There was a motion and a second and carried with four votes to forward this ordinance to the county council with a recommendation that the council not act on this ordinance and to encourage the council to put forward an actual ordinance on casinos, gambling, and gaming rather than a moratorium. That motion carried 4-0. Mr. Burton was not present.
Is this the second moratorium? So have we been actually a year?
It was a six-month ordinance originally. It ran out, and then this is a request to impose us another.
Okay, so this is just a second 6 months.
Yes.
The second mm-hmm. 6 months.
Okay.
It's
yes.
been about, it ran out about 2 months ago.
Mm.
Let me just ask Mr. Rutt.
Yeah.
Because over the years we've heard, you know, different people say, or different attorneys give us different advice. Moratoriums are frowned upon by the courts unless there's an emergency situation that you can point to as the reason. If you don't have a real good reason, that's where I'm saying the courts aren't real favorable on and supportive. Is that kind of a correct assumption, or could you clarify, because you're getting the big bucks to
mm-hmm.
do this? Yeah.
Typically, the courts, by the time the issue of a moratorium gets to them, the moratorium has run out.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't favor them, perhaps, but they also don't... Don't overturn moratoriums.
They don't overturn.
Okay.
So,
are you comfortable with extending, or are you more leaning towards that? You better have some good reasons. It's like everything, you need reasons. Do we have good reasons to extend?
Well, I think the recommendation of the Planning and Zoning Commission was to not extend, but to put forth an ordinance.
Well, we're not ready to do that.
Yeah, you could. I think you could extend the moratorium for a period of time, if you want to do it 3 months, 6 months, whatever, with the understanding that an ordinance is going to be in place.
But the first moratorium we're supposed to be working on. Has there been? See, that's the question. I mean, if somebody says, has there been any work on it? I don't know. It's in the staff.
The reason there's not been work is, I believe, we've been waiting for the General Assembly to make a decision on their gaming bill.
Yeah, are they going to allow more?
And I understand that there's
wouldn't it be better for us to be proactive and have it in place?
We don't know what the law is going to look like, so it's kind of hard for us to craft an ordinance.
Why would we're doing it on land use.
That was the argument made when we...
No, I don't remember that.
But we're in charge of land use.
I think that's the first I've heard that argument. No. But I'm just saying, I thought we were going to come together with approaching the casino racino through land use, which is what we do, with an ordinance about maybe size of parcel, different things like that. Not whether it's going to be permitted in our county. That's not part of an ordinance that we would ever draft. So we've got to like proximities to this or that, you know, whatever, infrastructure needs. Those are the only things we can address when it comes to gambling, because gambling is a permitted use in the state of Delaware, and all they're going to decide is whether there's going to be another venue in Sussex County. And then if we wait too late, Vance, we won't have time to catch up.
It's not a permitted use in Sussex County now.
It's a permitted use in the state of Delaware, gambling.
Under extremely narrow circumstances. They've only got three specific racinos. That's why we're going through this exercise in Dover right now to try to expand it into Sussex County, or so some
right.
are attempting.
But that's not a land use issue. So what we do is we can only address that decision that they make through land use, where it can be placed. We're not saying they're not allowed, because the state's saying they are allowed.
They're not
might
allowed
be.
In Sussex County as of today.
Well, they might be.
They might be, sure. And the discussion, I'm sure, it was that council said that we should probably wait to see what comes out of the state before
show me
we
that.
Craft.
Never, no,
does it make any sense to you? It doesn't make any sense to you to wait to see what's going to
no,
come
I,
out of
no, because we're going to address them through land use. Whether they get adopted today, they may adopt one 10 years from now. We'll have something in place to address those types of facilities through a land use approach, which would be infrastructure, site, size,
I don't
all
have,
those
I don't,
things.
I don't,
that's what we got
to
do.
I don't have a problem with doing that, but it does seem, and Mr. Wilson may want to weigh in, it does seem appropriate to continue the moratorium until we have that ordinance in place. You don't believe that to be true?
No, wait, the first moratorium, we were supposed to be working on it. What my concern is, if we haven't done anything, why? Who has directed staff not to do anything?
Because
is that your interpretation, Lawrence? That,
no.
What he just said, or?
No, as far as the ordinance, well, I'll respond to your question about the ordinance. The ordinance is being drafted.
Oh, it is.
Okay, it has been worked on.
We may had to make definitions, and we had to do a lot of other things that relate to an ordinance, per se.
Okay, what I want is the testimony saying we have been working on it in the last 6 months. Not that we haven't been working on it.
Even recently.
Okay.
But what's the holdup?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
Well, it's a working on it. I don't think it matters.
The attorney, it's in
the
hands of the attorney as far as prep.
Okay. I think the point is they're working on it. It doesn't matter.
No, that's what I'm just trying. He's saying we shouldn't work on it until the state does something.
No, I'm saying I believe some of the delay
has been
because they're unfamiliar with what's going to come out of the state.
Well, it doesn't matter what they come out with. That's what I don't get. That's the disconnect, Vance. I hate to tell you.
There's one thing I agree with Vance on is that it's not legal to have it in Sussex County. The law does not permit them to have a casino in Sussex County.
They just haven't determined
the
location.
Not under the Delaware state laws. No
right.
law, because it says you must, first of all, have a racetrack.
And
we have no active racetrack in Sussex County. That's the first thing right there, Noxie.
Sam, we can include all that in a land use approach to it. Whether they approve it with a racetrack, without a racetrack, means nothing to us. What we've got to do is deal with the issue of land use. That's what we do. Where can be placed? In what zones? Are they permitted anywhere? Not in this district. You know. In other words, we have to address it through a land use. That's pretty complicated. We can't wait till it's adopted.
Well, the question today is, do we extend the moratorium? So
mm-hmm.
is there a problem
and,
with extending
if we, there is a problem in my mind, Vance, if we haven't done anything.
Well,
Lawrence
like
is just, what, that's right,
okay.
what you told me we weren't. Now I'm hearing we have,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just wondering, I'd like to know, will, is there any, of course you don't know what's holding it up, but you all have been working on it. I would defer a week to find out if we could find out more. Where are we? And maybe a guess. Another 6 months, I don't think is appropriate. I don't think we could defend it.
I don't think it's appropriate to rush them to come by.
No, 6 months.
For,
listen,
for somebody to come back here in a week and tell us how far
it needs to go to the top.
I don't really see that. I don't see the urgency. I really don't.
If they adopt one tomorrow, there's urgency because then we don't have time. Anyway,
then we're gonna have,
that's right. That's why.
And then we're going to have to get in high gear.
We should be
too late.
We should be proactive. I mean, get ahead of it, guys. That's all I'm asking you. And that's what I thought we were doing with this moratorium. We were going to have something in place when the state, and it would send a message to them that in Sussex County, you're going to have these certain locations.
We're sending a message. The last time we did this, we sent a message that we're not happy to see this.
Well, there's a difference
in
opinion.
In Sussex County.
Mr. Rutten, if I may.
Yes.
What kind of standing, I guess, legally, are we better off to adopt a land use ordinance before they do something, or if we wait till they, if they pass some kind of thing, does that put us then behind the eight ball on You know what I'm saying? I mean, right, we're trying to pass a rule after the fact.
Right. If they pass this bill in Dover, it's going to be effective whenever the governor signs it. So if they pass it, you know, next week and he signs it the following week, it will have an effective date. So you don't know what that date will be. It's been introduced. You figure they're going to act on it by the end of June.
Committee hearing tomorrow.
Is that when the committee is?
Okay.
Okay. So.
My question is if they suppose they do something next month.
Right.
And we don't have any kind of ordinance, does that put us at a disadvantage to try to pass something after the fact?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Somebody could come in and make an application without a moratorium in place that would then preclude us, prevent us from actually putting in an ordinance that would apply to them.
Right, because at that point they would be filing under whatever existing commercial, you know, if they came
CR1
in and said under a C1 zoning and tried to fit it in under one of the permissible uses or under the catch-all phrases, if you don't have a specific something in place, you know, dealing with gambling, you are behind the curve.
So either way, we could be behind the curve.
Right. We need to put the moratorium on and direct staff to get her done. I mean, get her done.
Okay.
In most of the county, they could apply for a conditional use because all it says is that it could be a business, commercial, industrial use is more appropriate as a conditional use, so it would automatically be a conditional use in most districts. Some districts wouldn't permit it at all as far as an application, but most of the districts would.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mr. Phillips pointed out this is a public hearing. Is there anyone present from the public who wishes to speak to this?
How do you feel about this, Dan?
I don't like talking about stuff I don't live in.
Good thing you
stopped, Mr. Cole.
I've been doing it for years.
I think the rest of them this afternoon have done a pretty good job at it.
Okay, what's the pleasure, Council?
Could I add something else?
Yes, sir.
You keep saying reinstate, I believe is the right word everybody's been using.
Right.
It's actually run out.
Yeah, right. It's dead.
What you're doing, you're creating a new moratorium, if you create a moratorium.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Not extending it.
And do we have something on the table that we can vote on? Can we ask the Council to read the title?
This is a document that was introduced back 8 or 10 weeks ago.
Let me make a suggestion, maybe. Since we have done X amount of work, why don't we make it 3 months? And maybe that'll put a little pressure on the staff to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Can I add to that, too?
Yes, please.
If you adopt it for 3 months, it's got to be on the agenda for introduction. So you've got to get the ordinance prepared, discussed, and introduced. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks to get through the process, so your 3 months might be exceeded.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So. Okay. So.
And if you hit 6 months, I think, let me see the clause. Hold on a second.
Now, the ordinance, we don't have it right in front of us, do we? I mean, we just have the title?
No, I have it.
All I have is a title here. Mark, are we going to have a problem since it's run out that we don't have one in front of us that we.
He's got one, I think.
We have one.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a new one.
This is the clause. Section number 3 of the ordinance states this ordinance can be extended, modified, or terminated at any time by a majority vote of all members of the Council of Sussex County. So if you go 6 months, you can always amend it.
But I'm just saying, you're saying we're doing a new one.
There's no number that was introduced. Okay.
That was section 3 of the ordinance.
So we can extend that ordinance.
Mr. Bratton has a copy of the ordinance today.
I do.
So it'd have to be a new ordinance.
I have more papers flying over here.
I'll bring you a copy. It says you can be extended, modified, or terminated at any time by a majority vote.
But the current one, Lawrence, I thought you just said expired.
Expired.
Okay, so we've got to now introduce
moratorium.
A new one.
This is a new one.
You're saying if we change it from 6 months to 3 months, we have to reintroduce something. We can't amend the.
You have to do an ordinance. You want to do an ordinance on gaming, casinos, gambling.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a moratorium only.
Yes.
Right, that's, yeah. It's already talked about the moratorium right now.
All right, in light of the fact that we are working on one, and I would hope that the message we sent here today with this conversation, because we're back and forth a little bit, you know, with the chicken and the egg kind of stuff, these darn farmers, it's always chicken and the egg, I want you to know that. I would say let's, you know, adopt this because we are making some progress, but let's get it done. God, hey, let's get Everett, I guess, our one-eyed lawyer, we've got to get the one-eyed lawyer back in business.
He's about a half-eyed lawyer.
Half-eyed lawyer. God, I'll tell you, where do
does
we...
Someone, where do we, does someone care to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
And I'll second it.
And that is to extend...
To extend, I guess, extend it.
To adopt this or to adopt the ordinance for how, 6 months?
I think he said we have to do it 6 months or something. Yeah, let's just do 6 months.
Well, the ordinance is for six months, but as Mr. Lang pointed out, it does have a provision that can be amended or modified.
At any
so
time.
So if you see in April that things are moving quicker, you can change that.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
So we need, if they consider, we get an ordinance prepared, introduced, public hearings adopted, then at the time to act on that, and this moratorium still in place, they could terminate.
Right.
Okay.
And this is the exact same language from the original moratorium, correct?
Basically.
Basically?
I'm pretty sure it's almost word for word.
Yes. Thank you, Rob.
Word for word.
But hopefully we're not waiting for the state. We're moving forward.
Okay. We have a motion and a second to adopt this new ordinance to put a moratorium on for 6 months. Same. Questions on a motion?
Is a new ordinance the same ordinance just moving up?
Yes. Okay.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a new ordinance to us now because the old one expired. So
we'll
call for the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
There you go.
Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second to adjourn. All in favor, signify by saying
aye.
Oh. Wait, did it work?
We're adjourned.
Oh.
Thank you all.